This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, Season 9, Episode 27. And welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network, brought to you by HK. Today is Friday, March 1st, 2024, as of recording of this episode. And I am your host, Riley Bowman. And today I'm joined by a special guest, Sophia Katz. Say hello.
Hello.
Yo.
Yo.
Good to see you.
I was about to say, where's the yo at?
I slipped it in there. So, Sophia, we'll do a proper introduction momentarily with, but first you should know that today's episode is sponsored and brought to you by the 2024 Guardian Conference. You can find information at guardianconference.com. Tickets available for sale right now. Still early bird pricing in effect for a time. I think that'll be going away before too long. So don't delay in getting signed up for this year's conference. Again, guardianconference.com. And also, two honorary sponsors we'll talk about, I'm sure, both of these things. But first, there is a link in the show notes that you should check for Livefyre, the social media app that actually everybody should be on now, because Facebook doesn't like you. I know we're broadcasting on Facebook right now. Facebook doesn't like you. Instagram doesn't like you. Google doesn't like you. So guess what? Livefyre likes you. Check out Livefyre, yes. A social media app that is not just gun content, but definitely gun-friendly community could be found there. And it's pretty cool. I dig it. I've been on there for, I don't know, a couple months. Well, technically, I actually have an account going way back, because when Mike Sieglander, who's involved, first set it up, and Mike's like, yo, check this out. I'm like, okay. And I downloaded it and created an account. And then it's just been the last few months that I got back into using it. So guys, check it out. Link in the show notes, livefyre.com also, or is it livefyreapp.com? I think is the website. Anyway, I think that's
good question. Just type in Livefyre on,
yeah,
in your app store and you should be able to find it.
But there is a link in the show notes. And also anything that Sophia is involved in, she's gracing us with her presence here today. So she's an honorary sponsor, because without her, this episode wouldn't be happening. So go check her out. I know on Instagram at fitforfia, FIT4FIA. And anything else that Sophia wants to say and add about herself biographically, which we will allow her to do now. So welcome. Thank you for being a part of this.
Well, thank you, Riley, for having me on. I have not been a guest speaker in a very long time. I'm starting to think this may be the first time. No, Big Tech's Ordinance had me on once.
I know that you were on Big Tech's, yes, podcast. Yep.
Yes. Yep. That was at SHOT Show 2023. So it has been over a year since I've been a guest speaker. Thank you so much for letting me come on your show today. The introduction you did was wonderful. I also have my own podcast called She Shield Podcast. It is not only for women, as the name might kind of indicate. Riley's actually been a guest speaker there. So shameless plug. It's also my pride and joy, so it's easy to talk about. And yes, I'm glad you mentioned the Livefyre app. I am a little biased. I am their social media manager, and there's a fancier title in there, but at the end of the day, that is what I basically do for them. So if you're interested in joining our 2A community, we have not only training courses and drills by instructors like Mike Sieglander, Ernest Langdon, and others, soon to be Riley, but also it is a social media platform that has become a bit of a safe haven for the 2A community with all of the ongoing censorship, just like Riley mentioned. So yeah. Would you like me to do the rest of the introduction? Like who I am now? Is that what you're wanting?
Yeah, well, now is the time. So
now's the time.
So okay. Give us the Sophia Katz story. Who are you? Where the heck did you come from? What do you know? We got to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Oh, man. So my journey in martial arts began when I was 13 in a Korean-style martial arts. It's called Musulwan, and after 7 years of very hard work, it was actually tested by the Grandmaster, Bayan In Lee. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. It's probably not, but I've tried my best. And he came down, tested me for my first degree, black belt. So that was about when I turned 18. And then at the same time, I was very curious about grappling. I remember during sparring, we would hit the floor because someone would trip or, you know, someone would knock you over with a kick or something. And we would have to stop the clock. We would stand back up and then we would go again. So it didn't feel realistic. I remember feeling kind of, it felt superficial. And I would think about, you know, a fight on the street. If someone were to come over and just knock me over and, you know, would I be able to defend myself? And the answer was definitely no at the time because we'd never practiced it, not even on the soft, cushy mats at this dojo. So I started engaging in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I actually had to take a break after I started because I broke my nose for the first time. And then when I graduated high school, went to college, my college town had a bunch of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA, and Muay Thai opportunities. So I was able to take on Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai. My nose got to heal for a little bit. And then around the time I was training for my first Muay Thai fight, I was so excited. I was actually kind of doing it behind my parents' back because they didn't want me to get a concussion. And I was actually going to, like, during one of the, it was the, my sophomore year summer, I would go to Muay Thai and I told them it was just like a regular class, but I was actually doing fight camp. So I was training 8 hours a day. I would lift in the morning and then I would go to Muay Thai for 2 hours. I would then go to a one-on-one session with my coach and spar. And then I would have like a 2 hour break to run home, eat lunch, shower, go back to Muay Thai for a little bit, and then do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu until like 10 PM. And this was my schedule for, about 6 weeks. It was supposed to be an 8 week fight camp. And then I was supposed to be like slotted or whatever. And about 7-8 weeks in, well, during that time, I definitely got a bunch of concussions. I remember driving home one day and pre-concussive blows, I guess. I remember driving home one day and I didn't have vision in my right eye. And, I wouldn't look at my mom when I came into the house because I was afraid she would know and then pull me out of it. Even though I was like technically an adult, I was staying with her in the summer. So her house, her rules kind of thing. And even though she's my biggest supporter, sorry, I'm making her sound terrible. but yeah, that was a time where I was like, oh my goodness, she has a point here. I didn't tell my coach either because I didn't want to be pulled out. So all of that to say, definitely sustained some other injuries. But towards the end of fight camp, I broke my nose pretty severely. I couldn't breathe out of my left nostril and could hardly breathe out of my right. And I had an emergency surgery like 2 weeks after that break. So I had a septoplasty, pushed my nose back in, and I was told I needed to sit out for at least a year from combatives. And at the time, I didn't know about helmets like those made by Ben Aubin and Redbeard Combatives. I didn't know that there was a way for me to continue training. I wasn't trying to be lazy. I genuinely thought that my career was over in fighting. And I remember I went on YouTube and like typed in how to deal with a nose break BJJ and like nothing came up. It was like a bunch of shoulder injuries, back injuries, but nothing knees, nothing about noses, which that YouTube video is coming soon to my channel. But anyway, after that, I started to feel really insecure. I was in my college town. I started living in an apartment, not a dorm anymore. And I was living alone because I was not a fan of roommates. So I started to think of ways I could protect myself rather than doing combatives, because if I wasn't doing full contact, then how could I expect myself to hold my ground if someone attacked me? I would be very rusty. And while those fundamentals stay with you, they truly do. Once you learn things like shrimping and sprawling, it's not as, you know, you won't be as proficient when you take a break like I had. So I contacted an old friend in high school. I taught him violin. We would meet after school and I would help him with his violin. And he told me if I ever needed help later on to reach out to him. So I think we didn't talk for like 2 years. And I finally texted him and I was like, hey, he has a social media for firearms. And I was like, oh my gosh, I would love to learn by you. So he and I would go out and just do some basic fundamental shooting, some draws from the holster, very, very basic things. And that's when I bought my first holster. I upgraded it with some discreet carry concept clips. I'd found Tessa Booth's page, Armed and Styled, and that was a big source for me when I was learning everything. Mm-hmm. And she's still a great influence and now has become a friend. But anyway, got my first holster, started realizing that I did not know how to dress with it. I realized that there were only really a few outfits that I would kind of like rotate to dress with it. And I started wondering what I could do to be a better concealed carrier. I started looking into resources like Tessa and other women in the 2A space and started to get a bunch of support from the community. And around this time, trying to remember this timeline. So during this time, I hope this isn't too long of an intro, but I feel like
it's great.
The order of the story helps with context a bit. So cool. Okay. Around the time I was pre-med, so I was a biochem honor student as well as kinesiology, exercise science, and Spanish student at the University of Arkansas. So I was definitely kind of on my way to become a doctor. I had been applying to medical school during this time and was getting ready to leave medical school when I had another nose break, even though my surgeon begged me not to do that. I kind of thought, you know, jiu-jitsu is safe, and it really is. But when you've already had a nose break and then you've had a surgery, your nose is basically composed of glass at that point. So it was really easy to re-break, and I did exactly that. So I had another surgery, couldn't breathe again, and felt like, you know, my sleep was, you know, worth a 4-hour surgery. So went into that surgery, went into medical school thinking like, okay, fine, the combative side of my world is over. I'll just own a gun. I'll train when I can. And then I just started missing it so much when I was in med school. I talked about it to all my med school buddies and they kind of looked at me like, what are you doing here? Like there are so many things you love about this world. And I've always been told, if you can think of doing anything besides being a physician, then do that. Like, don't become a physician, because like, it really needs to be like your one thing. And while I'm sure there are exceptions to that rule, I started really thinking about that and ended up leaving medical school and pursuing this industry. I got a master's in exercise science kinesiology. And around the same time, I went and took Extreme Close Quarter Concepts by Craig Douglas. I was introduced to weapons-based entanglement. And then that's when my light bulb like really turned on. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is this world, right? Where we're actually talking about the fight in the 0 to 5 foot range. And while I'm not an expert on this topic by any means, it'll be a long time before I'm there. Again, I've taken one ECQC class. I have become passionate about sharing that experience and other training with, you know, Ben Aubin of Redbeard Combatives, Dave Boone, Matt Larson, a couple other instructors that have taught the fundamentals of weapons-based entanglement. And it has made me aware of how much I don't know. And so it's made me think about the people that have never taken a class like that, never even ventured into that topic, and how, I don't know, I started to become worried for those people, especially the female community, because besides Annette Evans of On Her Own, there aren't a lot of representatives of this idea. So I decided that that would be my path. This is something I would start developing in myself. And recently I've gotten back into jiu-jitsu. I actually went back to one of my old BJJ partners who actually, she was one of the ones that broke my nose. Again, she did not mean to. It was glass at that point. And we laugh about it now. I didn't tell her at the time. I told her like literally a couple months ago that it was actually her. And It was hilarious by that time. We laughed a lot because she knows too that like my nose was glass. It's at that point, you know, the wind could have broken it. So now I put a Redbeard Combatives helmet on and we are able to grapple with some striking, and I'll throw my gun inside the waistband and we'll fight over my gun, do things like that. Blue gun, of course. So that is my update. That is my story in chronological order, I guess. And I've also been to the Guardian Conference, got to train with some incredible instructors there. That has definitely been, that was a highlight of my 2023 year. And I'm looking forward to this one as well. So definitely, if you're listening and you don't know if you should pull that trigger, absolutely do, especially if you're a female and you're like, this sounds like another male dominated thing. It did not feel like that for me. There were quite a few females there, and the experience I had as the minority gender, I definitely felt welcomed and supported and safe. So that thumbs up to that. Anyway, okay, I'll stop talking, let you ask questions.
Oh, that's great. I said, give us a story. You gave us a story. Yes. And that was, you know, kind of your background and how you came to where you are, knowledge-wise, skill-wise, all of that. Tell us a little bit more about what you actually do now. So, I mean, tell us about your social media. Tell us about how you share in that journey. Tell us about, you know, the other things you're doing in the industry.
Absolutely. So other than a med school dropout, I have a social media page for my journey, just like you mentioned. That is at Fit for Fia. And then I began She Shield to begin a platform where I could talk about some things that I feel like I really needed support on in the beginning when I was starting my martial arts journey. I had some very negative experiences with authority figures in the martial arts space. And at the time, I felt very stupid and like it was totally my fault. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I take responsibility where it's due. But there was definitely some negative influence. I'm trying to think of how to say this respectfully, even though, you know, it is what it is. It was a bad experience. Where like instructors have taken advantage of situations and gyms were not a, you know, healthy environment for females, not only for myself, but friends that were like isolated and kind of like almost groomed by male instructors. And so I got to a place where I actually started She Shield so that we could talk about it. And it only really recently has come up, although it was actually in an episode with Andrew Henry. We talked about how martial arts environments aren't always the safest and healthiest. But over the years, I've asked guest speakers like Craig Douglas and Eli Knight about like what are some good things to look for when you are wanting to join a gym and train so that you can avoid those negative experiences. And that's kind of been how I brought that to the platform. And so that's what She Shield is for. But now it's just blossomed into so many things. I've had people on to talk about practical preparedness, concealed carry, competition shooting. It's become everything and just my pride and joy. It's an honor to get to sit down with people. And then I also work for Live Fire, like I mentioned earlier, and I'm also a firearms instructor, very basic level right now, NRA certified, which means nothing. But I do teach the fundamentals and I do have some private lessons available for things like concealed carry technique, which so far it's just been people coming in and learning how to wear their holster for the first time. And then we do a bunch of dry fire and we hardly do any live fire at that point. It takes a couple sessions for us to really start drawing from the holster and pushing time and everything. So that's been something in development.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's basically it.
That's awesome. That's great.
Thank you.
So, there's a lot of stuff that you've already done, I think, in your life, which I think is really fascinating because not many people have pursued, you know, martial arts and combatives and of course now shooting, and you didn't even touch on the competition shooting you've done as well.
Oh yeah.
You know, and so like I wish I was where you are when I was, you know, a long time ago. I wish I had a lot of that background already. And so I think that's really cool, you know, that you've had a lot of great opportunities thus far. And that's something that I'm really passionate about is trying to get more and more people involved in you know, whether it's combatives or shooting or train, like whatever, anything in this kind of this space, because really we're talking about self-defense and today's topic, you know, today's episode is called Women's Self-Defense, which is pretty broad in general, but it's because we're going to touch on a bunch of the things, I think. Whatever that is that you are interested in going after, like, I want to get more people involved in that. I didn't know about a lot of the opportunities when I was younger. I didn't even know about I kind of knew about competition shooting, but I didn't really know about it until I was basically in my 30s, you know? So it's like, man, the things I could have done if I'd gotten started sooner. So I think let's come back to that and talk about how we get more people involved, and make it as easy and low pain and low cost as possible. In other words, lower the barriers of entry, because I think for a lot of people, they probably feel like there's a lot of barriers. In some cases there are, but there doesn't have to be. And sometimes I think it's just a little bit of not knowing what you don't know. Cause I mean, honestly, the biggest barrier to entry for me was just simply not really knowing about stuff. So you're just like, even if you kind of know about it, you're still like, well, that I don't know where to get started. So, you know, why would I waste energy and, you know, doing that? But anyway, I'm kind of rambling here, but
no, I'm following you exactly. I see what you're saying. I actually started She Shield for that reason in particular, because ECQC was just kind of brought up to me by my former podcast co-host. She was like, you have to go to this course. It's 6 hours from you. Like, I don't care if it's all the money you have in your bank account right now, but you have to go. Craig Douglas is going to be near you. And I was like, who? And had she not randomly told me, and it was like, we were on the phone, like I was cleaning the dishes. She was like, dude, oh my God, guess what? And it just happened. And so part of it is bringing these guest speakers on who are being suppressed right now on social platforms, and also just maybe don't know how to advertise for themselves very well, to one platform where people can kind of, you know, pick out a la carte what they, you know, want to learn next. You made such a good point. That is, I mean, it's like the first step of healing, you know, even on like a mental health journey. It's psychoeducation. It's knowing like what is going on firstly. And if you don't mind, I'd love to address something you said already. Yeah. Is that okay with you?
Please.
So you mentioned getting started. Just like in your physical health journey, you have to identify your goal. And for me, right now, when I sit back and I think about like, what do I need to be training? What do I feel most insecure with? That is something that, and that doesn't really totally apply very well to fitness. So kind of just stepping into combatives, like if someone were to walk up to me on a street, what is the thing that I feel most insecure about? Like right off the top of my head, it's verbal commands, practicing managing unknown contacts. And if we have to get past that point, it's learning how to apply grappling to street combatives, and then also like timing on when to engage with the weapon. All of that, I don't have a lot of context specific practice with. So when I seek out a course, I look for someone like Craig Douglas and the ShivWorks Collective as like my next class to go take. I don't just kind of sign up for something random. So if that for you, if you're a listener, you're like, wow, I've never punched anything except for like the wall because of that one day I had that sucked. Then maybe start with an MMA course or a Muay Thai course, and even something like Krav Maga or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, especially Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but I was kind of talking about striking. If you're wondering what it's like to fight on the ground and have to move your body on the ground, because we don't do that in everyday life. I mean, I knock my husband over when he starts tickling me, and I like try to put him in a triangle choke. Otherwise, I'm not like... We don't crawl around on the ground. So like having to do that and fight is so bizarre. So you kind of have to start with the most immediate thing that needs attention. You don't have to go take BJJ and Muay Thai and then also buy a gun, buy a class, get your concealed carry license, and then go to ECQC all in a month. It's going to be a gradual investment, but it can be overwhelming at first, because when someone sits on a podcast and talks about all the things that go into safety, it can really feel like you are like 20,000 steps behind. So there's my rant.
Yeah. So that brings up some, I think, some really good points. And in folks, in case you're not picking up on this already, Sophia is very interested in being well-rounded in her approach to self-defense. And, you know, so often, including on this podcast, and because I think it's a tendency that even I have because of my own personal passions to get hyper-focused on, you know, the gun and shooting the gun and using the gun and doing things with the gun, that it's easy to overlook some of the other skills as well that make for a well-rounded, I don't know, dare I say, warrior or whatever, you know, term you want to use.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm laughing because now you're laughing. But
right. It's because of what we talked about before the show. Sorry.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I got you.
It's good. All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
But, you know, so I guess what I'm saying is there is obviously more to it than just the gun and using the gun. I think, you know, part of the reason is just thinking back and like the history of the podcast, you know, we started as the Concealed Carry Podcast intending to be focused towards concealed carry, which that's a very firearm specific discipline. You know, it's like, hey, how are you going to carry your gun and conceal it and do that safely and lawfully and all those things. And we've certainly have had some episodes where we've talked about stuff outside of that. But I think this is a great opportunity having you with your passions and your background to discuss some of these things. And also in the context of women's self-defense, because that's probably also, I think, misunderstood in a lot of ways. As far as, I mean, I know you see and hear comments from people all the time with respect to women in shooting and self-defense and women in the industry. But so there's all kinds of misconceptions and things there. And I definitely hope that we can address some of that. But one thing I would like to kind of throw back at you right now, and you started touching on this a little bit, and I think this is a good place to maybe bring this up, is the idea of finding your voice. I've heard you talk about that on your podcast, and I think we should maybe elaborate on that a little bit. I know it's something that, like, for instance, my business partner, Jacob, he's passionate about as well. I think we did a topic once upon a time, a long time ago, about practicing like commands, you know, like actually just being able to use words like stop, show me your hands or whatever it is, you know, if you're trying to deal with somebody like managing an unknown contact. So what are your thoughts on and kind of your own discoveries in finding your voice, particularly in the context of women's self-defense, because I think that is something that's maybe a little bit more difficult for some ladies at times. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think that's a great question and a wonderful place to start. As women, we are rewarded constantly, even in 2024, for being nurturing, soft-spoken, and feminine. And there, I believe, just from my experience, there's this unfortunate divide between being those things and also knowing how to be loud when it matters. When I went to ECQC, we started off our first, you know, night of training, because it starts on a Friday night, as far as how the courses normally go, from what I've seen. The one I'm looking at in Vermont also has a similar structure. We start at, you know, we started Friday night with something called mucking, and I was like, what the heck is this? And then, you know, we go out on to this back patio space. It's just beyond that, it's just dirt, and it's dark. It's Oklahoma. It's cold at night. And we are assigned to random partners. And the guy that showed up, I saw him walk in. He walked in late. He found out the class was available, and he, like, freaked out, drove there as soon as possible. And I heard him come into the class. He was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm here late. I apologize. I'm so happy to be here. He was so kind. And then Craig puts me with him. And he tells me to yell at this guy because we're going over managing unknown contacts. And if you haven't heard that, it's essentially how to begin the, I guess, de-escalation process, which De-escalation is a word I'm really trying to be careful with here, because there's de-escalation, but sometimes you have to also be the first to escalate to de-escalate. So I feel like that word has become, it's a little bit more nuanced now, but I'm talking about in the simple terms of you're trying to just get someone to get away from you and get out of your personal space and how to use your voice. That topic was new to me. It wasn't new when, you know, my sister and I were fighting. I found my voice pretty quickly then. But to yell at this stranger who was assigned to encroach on my space, the first simulation training thing we did that night was just to walk up to someone and insist on them helping you with your flat tire. And the idea is this person walks up. For me, I would be a single female alone, or just female alone. And the idea was we were in a crowded parking lot, kind of off to the side. And then this guy's walking up. He should not be, in my opinion, walking up to me, a single female, asking for help with his tires when he could go to, say, a male or a group of people closer to this establishment that we're close to.
And I'm sorry, I'm going to be a little misogynistic. You know, dude asking for help changing a tire, that world should that exist.
Oh, okay. Hey, that's totally fair. That's totally fair.
Just teasing.
And I know, I mean, that's, yeah.
No, but really, no, everybody should learn how to change a tire.
And it's one of those things. It's like, do you really need help, or are you using that to kind of get me to come help? Right. Are you going to rely
that's the point, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Kind of need for nourishment. To like help someone and like be, just to be helpful. So this guy walks up, and I have to say, hey, I'm going to stop you right there. What can I do to help you? And I start arcing, immediately. And that's where, if you're listening, you don't know what that is. That's kind of where you just walk in an arc like, fashion, as opposed to walking directly back and, potentially cornering yourself and not being able to see the space around you. So it offers an opportunity to get an awareness of your surroundings, as well as tell someone and command them the space you are comfortable speaking to them in. Hope that makes sense. I kind of said all that a little backwards, but all that to say, I had to do this to this poor guy who just walked in and was so apologetic, so kind. And I remember being like, stop, get back, and like started laughing. I could not handle it. And I also laughed to cope. So I was kind of just laughing. And he was like, he was so nice, of course. He was like, hey, I need you to be mean. He was like, you paid a lot for this class. You drove all the way here. I wouldn't be a good partner if I continued to let you laugh with me. I want you to be mean to me. Like, let's do this again. And I was like, oh, okay. All right, he means business, and I appreciated that. It's like jiu-jitsu. If we are doing competitive training, not cooperative, or somewhere in the middle, and I don't give any resistance, I'm not being a good partner. So he was doing the good partner thing by doing this, and yeah, I got to where I was like, dude, back, you know? And of course, we learned how to use cursing to our benefit, you know? So the difference between calling someone something or saying, hey, get the curse word back, you know, learning how to balance that in conversation. And that was, of course, really funny to like hear Craig explain that. But once we actually put it into practice, it made a lot of sense. So we did that. And then we had to do that again the next day and again the third day, all in simulations where there were firearms involved, of course, simulation firearms that shot projectiles, so sim rounds, as well as grappling and everything. So staying on point though with the voice, it is the first step in all of this. And there are so many examples. I mean, I have been out with friends like after ECQC in bars, and like I'm typically the sober one just because I'll want to have my firearm on me and I'm not drinking and having my firearm. Actually, it's been a good influence because then I don't end up drinking. But, you know, like when I still, you know, went to bars with friends, I'd have, you know, girlfriends pick fights with like random dudes. They'd be like, hey, you're too close to me, or, you know, something. And I'd be like, oh, she's joking. Like, I'm just going to take her now and, you know, practically lift her out of the bar. because I've seen like what can happen in these sims and also just in real life with personal experiences on, you know, reels and, you know, those viral videos of people just like starting a fight that never had to happen in the first place. Anyway, it's like this just ignorant approach to it that I've just started to appreciate. The people that pick fights don't think about like the worst outcome because they haven't seen it. That is the ignorant approach. I've started to appreciate that I am past that point in my life. I don't want to get in a fight. I've felt like the weight of I'm pretty tall. I'm 5'9" and a half, right up on 5'10". And, trying to decide if I want to share my weight. I weigh about 170 and I'd say I'm pretty muscular. So while I don't think I would be like the first target for a guy, you know, wanting to scoop someone up, I'm still absolutely a target. And I think I could put up a fair fight, but I think about my friends who have like never trained, never had to use their voice, never don't have any tools on them. Or if they do, it's a little folding knife that they use as a rabbit's foot. And I think back to that night in ECQC where I could barely yell at this guy who was asking me to yell at him. So yes, that is a long response to you. I do want to add though, this is interesting. I was getting a cake for my mom and I went, did I tell you the story already? I was getting cake. Okay, I'm the closest daughter of hers. My other sisters are in Boston and in Colorado. So it's my job every year, such a great job, to go and get the cake, go home and spend my mom's birthday with her. And I was running behind, picking up this cake. The day before, this homeless man had come up to my dad and I, and my dad isn't like the most confrontational man. And this guy came up asking for money. This is like, I was in my 20s, like very early 20s. This is before I'd even purchased a firearm. And this guy came up and he was like, do you have any money? My three kids are waiting for me in a motel with my wife. She's sick. And my dad just looks at me and goes, do you have any money? And I was like, ugh. So I like go and get like all I have is like a $20 bill. I hand it to this guy. And I just want him to go away. And cause we were not in a public place and my like, you know, intuition was like, just get him to go away. The next day, the same guy comes up to me. I'm holding this cake that I'm trying to like carry like perfectly so it doesn't topple over. Same guy comes up. I'm parked a bit far because at the time there was a line and like the spots in front were taken. So the same guy walks up to me. I'm now alone. And he was like, hey, can I get just like $5? I've got a sick kid. You know, tells me a different story. And I genuinely did not have cash, but I was also just immediately pissed that this guy came up to me while I was alone in a female. Like I was just like mad. I was like, this should not be happening. Also, I gave you money already. Like go away. And anyway, all that to say, he proceeds to walk up to me and goes, I know you have money. Give me some money. And he's now encroaching on my space. I'm getting in my car and he's encroaching on this small little space between my car door and my seat. And so I turn around and I was like, I will not say exactly what I said that day, but I was like, I was like, you need to back up and you need to never approach a single woman alone again. What do you think you're doing? And I was yelling so loud that like, I know people around could hear it. And I could, at that point, I felt like I was barking. Like I was like, back up. Like, just like this man voice came out of me. And I'm sure he was like, what the heck? Because I was so afraid I was going to drop this cake too. I was like, I am responsible. Anyway, so I found my voice that day. I found it. It was there. She was loud. And it goes to show, like, when you are pressed, you would be surprised what you can do. But there is a technique to how to talk people down and away from you. And there's a better way to do it to make sure that they don't encroach on your space like that man did. Because looking back, I should not have gone to my car door. I should have gone around my car, made sure he was on the other side and waited for him to completely leave. I put myself in a compromised position. Luckily, he stepped away. I truly think he was just bumming for money, obviously. So I did the best I could at the time. But, you know, could be better. And that's how I think about my sister being alone. She's so gullible and nice. If someone came up and was like, give me money, she'd be like, okay. And, you know, she'd just do it. She wouldn't mind. And so I think about her being between a car door and what if someone was after her and not her money. And they were just kind of using money as like a, anyway, does that answer your question?
Oh yeah. That was great. Okay. Along with some stories to go along with it too.
Yes. Lots of stories.
Yeah. I think personal stories are always great because they're great ways of teaching, you know, the point that we want to make, you know, so that's good stuff.
Mm. Cool.
How would you recommend, so someone that wants to get into more like combatives or martial arts type training, what are your recommendations there?
Absolutely. So
as far as like, you know, where would you look? Where would you go to? Mm-hmm. What would you look for specifically in a school or gym? What would you avoid? Mm-hmm. Would love to hear it.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great question. So this is a big topic that I have since kind of developed my answer towards based on several conversations on SheShield. So to give you the answer, like the holistic answer that I have collected from all of my guest speakers and my personal experiences, because I've been to many, many different gyms and I've seen a lot of trends. First of all, decide what martial arts you're interested in. You should absolutely be interested in what you're going to do. If, as far as the balance, and I have not been in a street fight. No one has come up to me and tried to drop kick me. I've been in a lot of verbal de-escalation bits, many, many. I've stepped in for people, not saying that's what you should do, but like I literally just something like comes up and I step in and I'm just there apparently. And then I just start standing up. Those are fun stories I'll have to tell you later, either on or off the pod. But like voice, yes, I've had to do that. But I'm not professing to have like saved a family from like a Muay Thai fighter on the street or anything. So just want to be very clear. However, when it comes to training a realistic martial arts, the answer that I've gotten from people like Craig Douglas, Matt Larson, Eli Knight, Aaron Jannetty has been a combination of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. MMA is a really good one because you kind of get the best of both worlds. You get striking and you get some ground combatives. Greco-Roman wrestling or any form of wrestling and Muay Thai. Those are the four that are like, they constantly show up in these conversations and they are all professions, styles more so that I have engaged in. And I have learned such important things from each of the four. It's not that you need to go out, listener, and start in all four of these. I would pick the one that sounds the most interesting to you. If you want the best of both worlds, like I mentioned, MMA is really good. If you want to learn some striking, some weapons, contact, and some very, very, very basic groundwork, Krav is a good one. When it comes to what to look for, so make that your first, you know, selection, almost like your kind of like narrowing down your options. Say you're between Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and a Krav Maga gym or something. Heavily research these gyms. Look at reviews online. Sometimes they have a social media you can kind of look up just like you would before, you know, a Tinder date, kind of do your digging, and then try to go to a class without taking it. So walk in, and I've experiences that have taught me to do this. Even though I was able-bodied and like higher, I had more experience than the majority of the students, I would go to a class thinking that's all I needed to have to take the class. And then after one very, very bad experience, I decided that I would no longer just jump into a class anymore. Unless it's like the Easton Training Center's BJJ in Colorado. I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, they have a great reputation. But go to that class and sit on the sidelines. It's okay to walk in. It's actually a good idea to introduce yourself to the owners, get a good feeling for them. And then observe the gym. Of course, check out their class schedule. Try to go to a time where there is a women's class and a time when there was maybe a co-ed class going on at the same time, and observe a few things. First of all, observe the etiquette. Are people communicating? Do you see people having just like crazy ego fights, throwing each other around, people getting injured? Is there a coach spectating to make sure no one is hurting them? Are there clear rules for cooperative versus competitive training? And then how is the turnout for the women? Because gyms mm-hmm. that offer a safe, and Paul Sharp goes into this on She Shield. I'm not trying to plug my podcast too much, just kind of where I got my information. Okay. You're on it, so that helps. But
yeah,
Paul Sharp goes into this a bit, and this is so true. If you go to a, say, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gym, and they have like maybe one or two females there, there is probably a reason for that. I went to a gym once where the instructor made one of our good friends feel very uncomfortable. He had told her he kept wanting to meet up with her, and she wrote me one day and she was like, why would he want to meet with me? And of course, my alarm bells are going off due to my previous experiences. And I was like, he shouldn't need to meet with you one-on-one. Why don't I go with you? I'm like, I'd love to know what he wants to tell you. Like, let's do this. And he apparently said, no, don't bring Sophia. And she was like, okay, well, that's the only way I'm going to talk to you. But after class one day, he ended up asking her to come into his car. And then he tried to like kiss her and professed that he thought they were in a relationship the whole time based on their texts. And I read those texts and it was like the most benign messaging, like the like equivalent of how I would message my violin instructor in high school. Like, could not have gotten a clearer message of this is not a relationship. He was obviously defending his, you know, his pride was probably hurt, whatever. All that to say, three women, including myself, actually quit that gym the following week. And after that, because so many women were gone, women slowly started quitting as well. Moving to other gyms, I should say, because that's actually what we did. So our women's class went from like freaking 12 people to like 3 or 4. It was really sad because a lot of us would do the women's class, then we would go to the co-ed class, and then we'd go out afterwards for boba tea. That was like our thing. We stopped that completely. So that community aspect was gone. So if you walk in and that female audience is low, attendance is low, that is a great indicator. Another one is the kids class. If there is a good kids program, that is a pretty good sign that the gym is family oriented. And as someone who does not have kids and has not experienced this or experienced any issues personally, I highly recommend going and listening to that episode of Paul Sharp and Eli Knight on those things to look for in those episodes. I'm sorry, in those gyms, because they're both instructors of Jiu-Jitsu and they both have kids classes and they kind of explain the mentality behind that. But having that family oriented focus, as opposed to being maybe a competition gym where like you have just like a bunch of dudes going there to, you know, become the next gold medalist or whatever and the next BJJ competition, that's a really good indicator that it maybe isn't the best gym for you. Some gyms don't just like have a big female presence because they just don't. I don't want to discount all, but I do think that that is a really good indicator. And just feel out the vibe. I hate to use that Gen Z word because I know I'm kind of showing my age here, but the vibe is so important. If you walk in and you feel like you actually feel like some tension or you can tell people are being showy, you see someone get injured, I mean, trust your gut. That will be just a great indicator. And also don't be afraid to ask the instructor questions. Like, how many females go here? Like, do you have a kids class? And hopefully he doesn't ask you if you have any kids back. Cause if you say no, that might be creepy. But, I mean that you could ask questions like that and maybe even say you get like an okay vibe, but you want to test it out yourself, go and train the second session. Usually gyms have a 1 week trial minimum. Sometimes it's only a one class trial, but typically it's a 1 to 2 week trial. Does that help?
Oh yeah. Some great suggestions there.
Ooh, sorry, there actually is one more. Do you mind?
Please.
Just remembered this. So the timeline in which they allow people to start sparring is also super important. So if you join and on your first day, they allow you to go into a competitive role. So I'm not talking about like cooperative, just flowing, kind of getting the feel for it, but they tell you like 3, 2, 1, break, like crush goals. That is a bad sign. A lot of gyms have a trial period where the instructors are watching you during cooperative training to see if you are ready for a high stress competitive role so that you are not injuring their students. Injury and prevention of injury should be their focus. As someone who has broken her nose, like I mentioned so many times, like that's been a huge thing for me. I have to really feel people out and I have to only pick a few people I'm willing to train with. You should be able to, first of all, deny any role. You do not have to say that, like there's an unspoken rule at one point that was like, if an upper belt comes and asks you to roll, you can't deny the roll or something. That's just not true. To use the more polite wording for that. That is not true. You can say no at any point. If you're feeling like rolling at 30%, you can also say, hey man, I'm totally down to roll. You know, my back is injured though, and I'm only willing to roll at about 30% max like effort or, you know, force. They should be able to say, I can totally do that. Or, you know what? I'm actually looking for someone to go a little bit harder with. I'm going to pass and move on. So the sparring scene is very important. The gym I mentioned earlier where I was like, I wish I had viewed it first, observed it first before I took a class. I won't say the name of it. If anyone's really interested, I can let you know. I don't think it's there anymore. But I met the owner of this franchise at a tactical rifle course a couple months ago. And I was like, oh, you own that gym? I went in and the very first day it was an MMA class because I wanted to get back into striking and rolling. He was like, do you want to spar? And I was like, sorry, what? He was like, do you want to spar? And I was like, you have not seen me spar ever. Why wouldn't you? Like, he didn't even take me off to the side and spar me first. He didn't do any of that. He just allowed me to do that. And I remember at the time thinking, I actually ended up doing it. And I trained with one of the only females there, big indicator. And she and I like ended up basically drilling something we just learned. We didn't end up really sparring. But I remember looking around and seeing like these very muscular, tall men hitting these like people that were definitely not in their like weight class or it usually the one instance I'm thinking of is just like very, she was an older, shorter woman. And this guy was just like throwing these blows at her. And she was just kind of like covering the whole time, but I could tell she was just waiting for the round to be over. There was no like, there was nothing cooperative about it. There was no technique to it. Like he was obviously doing it for ego. And I remember never going back after that. I looked around and I felt sick to my stomach. I didn't even say anything to the instructor. Cause at the time I don't know, I didn't feel I had the merit or maybe I thought I was being a wuss, but I was just, the vibes were bad and I never went back. So sparring. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good suggestions there. A lot of things I think to be, aware of and to look for, as you mentioned. So thank you for sharing all of that from, and including from your own experience. So let's shift a little bit to firearms training. What are some of the challenges as you see it of women getting, number one, learning how to shoot, learning guns, learning concealed carry? What are some of those challenges?
So great question. Besides the obvious of like women walking into, I hate to say the obvious, I'm sorry. Someone listening may not be aware of this. I guess I see it a lot on my For You page. So I think it's obvious and it's on everyone's For You page, but that's not true. Besides the typical situation of a woman going in and being offered the very small pink, you know, 22 revolver. I'm just trying to think of like a good example.
No, the best is the pink airweight 38. No. Even better, 357 Magnum.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good point. That's
like,
so true.
Mm-hmm. Here you go. Here, little yes. old lady. This will be perfect for you. And it's pink.
Exactly. Yes. That besides that very, very classic situation, my brain just totally short-circuited because it's going in two different directions right now.
Reset. Flip the switch.
Reset. Exactly. I would say I want to start with this, and then I'm hoping that other point will come back up because it was much more important. I would say the false sense of confidence is one of the first things that popped up when you asked that question. So the things that are sold to women to make them feel, I guess, lucky and safe when they really aren't. So teaching women to carry a gun without training, not teaching them to think about their mode of concealment before purchasing a gun, asking them the why, any of that, not making them be critical thinkers for themselves. And actually, the point just came back to me. It's almost like I'm suppressing it because it bothers me so much. But a very typical student I get, and I think you and I have talked about this before, is the one that comes in and has learned firearms from her husband or father, uncle, who was in the military, law enforcement, or just a gun enthusiast, one of the three, really just have your pick. And they only teach firearms within their context of training. So for example, my CrossFit gym we're kind of a close-knit community. And as I've gotten to know them more, I've kind of told them who I am. I waited a bit to kind of feel them all out. But one of the coaches and I chatted after class one day, and this is my favorite question when I'm in public by people. When I tell them what I do, they're like, "Do you want to see my gun?" Well, she and I were the only two people there in the CrossFit gym. And this CrossFit gym they're very pro 2A. They like love what I do. They're so supportive of it. They actually let me go and dry fire there and do tactical games prep on like Sundays. So they're very supportive. All that to say, it's not like we were breaking any rules. So I was like, you know what? Sure, show me your gun. So we go into like one of the side rooms, and I'm always very like cautious as to how people will handle it. So like before she shows it to me, I'm like, let's just keep it, you know, pointed, you know, the typical, like, let's keep it pointed in a safe direction. Is it loaded by any chance? You know, just kind of feeling her out because I've never seen her shoot, never seen her handle a gun. She was like, no, there's actually not one in the chamber. And I was like, okay, cool. So like, there's potentially not one in the chamber. And two, let's see how this is concealed, because she could also just pull this out and it could fall. I don't know what it's in. So she pulls out she gets her fanny pack, and I'm like, okay, cool. It's in a fanny pack. My ideas on fanny pack carry have progressed to, you know, more accepting and situational dependency. But, she pulls out her fanny pack, and her gun is like wedged between this like elastic band. It's like a 1-inch thick elastic band, and there's no trigger guard. I have like a few pieces of criteria that I like to recommend when discussing off-body carry, in the context of fanny pack carry, specifically having a holster that is fit to your firearm for optimal retention, having something covering the trigger guard, preferably hard plastic so you can't pull the trigger through the fabric. And then there's also a third one that I'm just blanking on right now, but those are the two main ones. That's what she was not checking off. When I see this, right, I just ask her, I was like, hey, let's just keep the gun in the bag. Let's keep it there. And then that's when we started talking, and I was like, hey, have you ever considered getting yourself a Kydex holster? Before this, though, I was like, hey, are you open to a conversation about this? Because I have a few pointers. If you are wanting to hear them, I don't want to take up your time. I've learned, and I'm not trying to poo-poo on men, but they like always assume you want their advice. Like, I had a guy come up to me the other day, and he asked what I did. And I kind of told him like the basics, and he started telling me some very basic things about concealed carry, like just, oh man, dude, that like 9mm is a good caliber to start with. And I was like, oh, thanks. Like, that's so good to know. Like, just kind of being like, and I'm not, let me be clear. I'm not in this place where I'm like, I know everything. Cause oh my gosh, I know 5%, y'all. I'm still learning, but I don't like to come at people and just like assume they want to hear what I have to say. And it's because I've had so many people just talk at me for so many years. So
right.
Yeah. And sometimes it's really good advice. Like, if you were to just start telling me stuff, I can almost assure you I don't know it yet. And I would love to hear that. But it just happens when people don't like ask you where you're at. So anyway, I didn't want to be like, oh my God, your gun is so unsafe right now. But I was like, hey, are you willing to discuss this? And she was like, yes. And that's just a tip to people out there listening, hopefully men listening, that maybe need to hear that. Women too, obviously. But sorry, moving beyond that point.
Yep.
She was like, yes, I would love your advice. And I could tell it was genuine. And I was like, cool, we're vibing. This is good. And so I tell her, I just dropped my fanny pack video. And I was like, will you watch a YouTube video I made? I was like, this is the first time I plugged a YouTube video to someone in real life. But like, can you take some time out of your day to check this out? I said, I think it will help you consider some things about your current setup. And I think the visuals in my video will help you understand a little bit. And I said, I'm still learning about fanny pack carry, but these are some things that I've learned just like rolling with one on the mats. And I could tell it was like hitting her, like these points she hadn't considered. And I asked her about like how she came about her setup. She was like, oh, my husband bought the fanny pack for me. And when we go shooting on the range, because I also asked her about her training, all they do is they pick a gun up, they fire at maybe some like small variation distances, and then she puts the gun back in the fanny pack. So there's no like transferring gun out of fanny pack and back into fanny pack. So no wonder she hadn't like dropped her gun already and learned this the hard way, which I'm glad she hadn't. All that to say, her husband didn't think to say, hey, this is off-body carry, so let's talk about some of the potential dangers of it. Let's talk about the pros and cons, and then let's also go over a safe manner of concealment within off-body carry. And one thing she did do is have a separate compartment for her firearm away from her chapstick and wallet. Yeah. That is like a huge one that I was like, yes, cool, she checked that box. And I even commended her for that. That was the first thing I said. I was like, oh my gosh, good, you have this. Now let's talk about some other stuff. So all that to say, it's this lack of kind of context that I feel like people teach women under. There are some things about female concealed carry that just don't apply to men. I don't know a lot of men that like to wear like high-waisted pants and crop tops yet. So like that is something that is very context-dependent. No? Okay, cool. I don't know, man. No, I'm just kidding. So there's that. And then there's things like off-body carry and also teaching a woman how to grapple, and like if someone comes up and grabs her bag, how to break that grip and push away from it and deliver a solid knee or kick or something and then get back and be able to draw, like things that like aren't getting taught, because I don't think the men are doing this maliciously. That is not my, like, that's not my assumption. I think they are showing them what they know. They have a toolbox with a limited number of tools, and they are using that to teach their female counterparts. And they are so glad that their female counterpart has a gun because they want her to be safe. And they don't think about like, what does she need to know for herself? And what do I need to do to ensure that she looks elsewhere beyond me? Because I can't give her that right now. That I think is the biggest issue, going past pink marketing, which whatever at this point, honestly. Sorry. Some women are like, I like pink. And I'm like, good, honestly, go for it. That's not the point. You know what I mean?
Well, you brought up some really good points, including ones that I absolutely completely agree with. I think that is absolutely a thing. I mean, I've even seen it as a dude where other dudes try to mansplain to me, you know. It's actually quite comical to me. If it's rare these days, but I can say definitely in the last 5, 6, 7 years, I've been on just a common public indoor range where some dude walks up to me and is like, hey, man, like, you know, and just starts like going off on something, you know? And I'm like, not to like, you know, because I definitely don't know everything yet either, but it's like, bro, just the wherewithal that you have to just approach a random dude and just start like spouting whatever, you know, because I appreciate that you clearly you want to help or whatever, right, sure. But so I mean that, yes. Like I absolutely see, like, if there are dudes out there that are willing to do that to other dudes, then I can't even imagine, you know, what must go on towards members of the opposite sex like yourself. We've all seen it. We all know, you know, what you're referring to when you shared that. And I think that, you know, the common advice is ladies, don't get training from your husbands, boyfriends, significant others. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely do, as a general rule, I think that is true. I think that there are some exceptions, but
sure.
But they are few. They are the exceptions for a reason.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Something you said, it's, man, you know, I would say the biggest thing I learned from my 7 years of therapy, not to brag, was how to distinguish intention from impact. And I'm still learning that every single day. I mean, like, constantly. That discernment is really has been a challenge for me. And I don't think that these men come up wanting to be malicious. I do think some of the intention is ego, or some of the like underlying, sure, implicit maybe intention is ego. I know that ultimately the intention is to help, normally, from what I can tell. But the impact it has is not always aligned with that intention. It's not helpful. It's sometimes counterproductive. I was recently at, well, I'm trying to think how I should put this. I have been at competitions for competitive shooting, and I've had a person be helpful. And the first bit of it was very helpful, but they gave a lot of advice in a small amount of time, and it was stuff beyond my skill level. And because of that, it actually overwhelmed me, and I didn't feel like I could do my like mental rehearsal. And then it comes to boundary setting, right? Like, man, it's hard. Like, I tell women all the time, boundaries, boundaries. But dude, when there's like someone trying to help you, it's hard to be like, hey, actually, you know, I understand you're trying to help me, but I need to go be on my own for a little bit. I appreciate you, and I'll come back in a little bit, you know? Or you don't have to promise to come back. But it is okay to look at someone, again, something I struggle with all the time, and just say like, oh man, you know, this is really helpful. I think it's a little bit too much for me right now, as far as I'm having trouble. You can put it on you. You can say, I'm having trouble absorbing it all. Oh my gosh. Wow. Such good information. I'm going to consider what you said, and I'm going to go over here and think a little bit to myself and just kind of digest what you gave me. It's okay to like step away. It's okay to step away. Yeah. And I think that's something everyone has to learn. I know, like you just mentioned, you get approached by men, and man, that is like, I'd pay to see that. I just want to know what they say to you. You got to start recording it.
It's been a while, but
yeah.
That would be entertaining. I remember what was the context? I remember being somewhere once. I think it was like part of an industry event.
Okay. Really?
It might have even been like industry day, you know, at the range at SHOT Show. Yes. Like not this most recent one, but maybe a couple of them ago or something.
Okay.
Where, you know, cause I mean, you have all these vendors, you have all these guys and gals, and, you know, all these companies, right. With their guns and stuff. And they don't even know who they're getting that's coming through there, that's shooting their stuff. They supposedly they're media, but, I've been in the industry long enough to know that just cause you are in the industry and that you are a media personality, even like of some note, does not mean you actually know how to shoot or even handle a gun all that well. I remember attending an event once that, let's just say there were some safety things going on with some other media personalities that I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get shot. like we got to do better than this, people. Like,
we do. Absolutely.
But, I just remember, I think it must have been industry day, but I just remember that, like, I'm just kind of doing the thing, going to like a booth, if you will. And like start picking up a gun. And I know that like part of their job is like, hey, this is the such and such gun or optic or whatever thing. And they got to explain it. But I just remember the way that was being explained. It just felt like, hey, man, you don't know what you're doing. Like, let me tell you how to work this, you know, and how to shoot right. even. And then I just remember, you know, all right, yeah, okay, cool, bro. Yeah, all right. You know, I'm just nodding and okay,
Yes.
Okay, I'm like, can I shoot it now? Oh, yeah, sure, please, you know, and I put the mag in and then I just remember going bop, 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 you know, rattling out a couple rounds and then dude's like, well, clearly you know what you're doing.
Right. Maybe he had not to defend him, but like maybe an influencer person did come by because Riley, I think back to when I was an influencer in this industry, I still am, but when I started out as one, I had no right. I still don't feel like I do, but dang, did I have no right. Like, I'm talking like malfunction clearing. I didn't even know how to do that. And I was over here giving advice on concealed carry. I mean, ow. Like, I had a big awakening. At one point, I almost stepped away completely. And I was like, I'm a fraud. I can't do this. And then I was like, what if I just educated myself? And then I owned up to my mistakes and moved on. And that's what I did. But
yeah
maybe he did have someone.
Oh, yeah. Like, I could see that. I appreciate you sharing that. You know, that's... I can relate to that to some extent. I mean, give you an example.
Sure.
Back in 2018, probably thereabouts, I remember in a way I kept doing all the same things. I mean, we were doing the podcast. We were obviously running our business at concealedcarry.com. But as an instructor, I stepped away.
Okay.
And the reason why I stepped away, it may have been 2019, but it was in that ballpark, was because I felt like what I was teaching was this isn't correct, but this is the way it felt. It felt like it was almost like a lie. Okay. And that makes it sound way harsher than it probably is, but it was just, I was like, I need to step back and reevaluate myself and who I am as an instructor and what I'm teaching. Okay. And I need to make sure that what I'm teaching is consistent across the board, as far as, this is probably a better way of phrasing it, as far as me teaching exactly what I believe I know and do. Because, and I think I got to where I was because I was teaching, I was basically regurgitating information that I certainly knew, I suppose, and I had learned it. And some of that came through instructor classes and different things over the years. But then I remember, I just remember this so distinctly that I got done teaching a class and I was like, what I just taught with regards to the grip, or I think it actually had to do specifically with trigger manipulation, trigger control. I was like, that's not even what I actually do and believe. Hmm. Why am I teaching that? Well, because that's the only thing I really, like, that's just, I've done this enough times, it just comes out like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So anyway, just you expressing like this, like, maybe almost want to just take a step back or get out of this because you feel like you're not being intellectually honest with yourself or whatever. And so that's why for about two-ish years, I didn't really teach any classes. And during all that time, what was I doing? I was studying and I was rewriting my curriculum from scratch because I was like, we've got to get this to where it's consistent with what's going on up here, truly, you know?
Right.
Anyway, I don't know why I said all that, but...
And
this is your interview, but...
No.
It just popped into my head.
No, I'm glad you talked about that. Thank you for sharing that. That's incredible. And I look up to you. I've met a lot of people that look up to you. And for you to admit that you have been through that yourself is so helpful. I mean... Yes. I feel like I'm kind of going through a learning period right now. I've been very quiet on... Sorry, my hair is doing something. I keep flipping my hair for those on the video thing.
I don't have that problem.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Okay, that's really funny. yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I guess I shouldn't complain. But I'm in this era of just wanting to take classes and learn. And anytime I go out to put content go to put content out. You really threw me off there. I am blaming you. I watched the video back like 20 times, and then I sometimes don't even post it. I was talking to Tessa not too long ago of Armed and Styled, and I won't share exactly what she said, but we shared a common frustration of like really working hard to script out, record, edit a video, and then just not thinking it's good enough. And there is a benefit to that mentality. It can be too much sometimes. There's a lot of, I think that a lot of it is borderline imposter syndrome. And yep. I then find a video of someone speaking on the same topic and it is like watered down. They're not going over some nuances that are super important. They're not going over some like, I don't know, female specific context that like I could have given the perspective of. And I'm like, why didn't I publish that video? Or why didn't I go through with that? And it's been this back and forth. But I keep telling myself that like I'm walking this year so I can run in 2025. Like I'm trying to fill it up with classes and fill it up with like She Shield. Cause every time I have a guest speaker on, I walk away just like overwhelmed. Like there's so much good information they bring. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes feel like I blacked out during all of it because my brain is just trying to absorb it all. And I have to go back and listen to it, which is easy to do because, you know, editing and stuff. But it's all that to say, it is very helpful for people like you to be honest about that journey. And I have no shame about it now. I used to panic if people ever found out, like they would discount me completely. But if anything, I hope it shows that I'm willing to learn. And the only time I really take things down now from the past is if it's just totally wrong and there's no way of salvaging
sure.
it.
Sure.
I have had one video that I redid later on. I did a lot better. It was a concealment with a dress. And now the caption on the older one is "See updated version 2.0 to get people to go to that video, because I think that shares like the first one wasn't bad, but I was printing. So I was like, this is not acceptable to my current yeah. standards. Back then I was like, good enough. But then I did another one and I was like, oh my gosh, you can't see the gun at all. This is perfect. And it was with a bigger gun. So the first one was with a Glock 43X filster setup. Second one was with a Glock 19 filter setup. And I concealed the 19 better because I learned more. Also, yeah. the dress wasn't as tight because at the end of the day, you can't wear the bodycon sometimes. You just can't. Yeah. You just can't. So also, I would rather fight, and this is how I think now, I'd rather fight in that looser dress than the bodycon dress. So I don't mind switching that up every now and then. You didn't ask
totally
for that.
Fair.
But,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, like, and kind of where we started off on the, not, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a tangent, but you were talking about how really? Someone was sharing too much, you know, information.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, whoa, you know, and my thoughts just came back to this, that there's a challenge with teaching people that are really close to you personally and relationship wise. But it's also probably much simpler than that in the terms of that not everybody's an instructor. And so like when you have your significant other, your spouse, whomever trying to teach you stuff like that, what that story you just shared reminds me of is someone that isn't an instructor, or they're not an experienced instructor yet, because an experienced instructor knows to layer and stack information in a logical, simple, progressive manner that doesn't, you know, do too much all at once. And mm-hmm. and I think that I'm thinking back to like some of the lessons, things I've been taught by family members of mine. And then it's like, and I've probably done this with my own kids at times. So you're just like, it's not a spoon, you know, you're spoon feeding with. It's like, you know, the whole garbage can. You're just like, oh, this is all the stuff you need right now, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that probably is more prevalent in amongst, you know, especially like family members, mm-hmm. but also just people that just don't they're not an instructor, so they don't understand what good instruction looks like. I don't know. Thoughts on that?
Love that. I actually have a question for you. So I've been struggling with my, so I'll have a student come in a one-on-one class. I'll use this most recent student. Her husband emailed me and was like, this is one of my Christmas gifts to her, a class with you. I found you on social. I think you guys will get along. She's pretty nervous to start concealing, but she's very interested. She's already in, like, I'm not pushing her. We've shot together before. She's a good shot. And I'm, you know, that's pretty vague, but it tells me that like they've gone into more than just holding a gun. So that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, from what I could barely tell.
Yeah.
And so we had an hour and a half together and we ended up going over 30 minutes. And honestly, I was just having a good time with her. I didn't really care. And I was also learning a lot, but at one point it occurred to me that like, I was like vomiting information at her and I almost wanted to stop and be like, don't pay me for this class. Like, I don't know how you absorbed any of that. That was so much information. And she told me, because I, at the end of every class, I ask for feedback because I love feedback. And I was like, what could I have done better? And she was like, I think that would have been overwhelming had you not offered a like PowerPoint for me to take home. So anytime I give, I have this PowerPoint I follow and it's a Canva presentation. So the links are clickable. I guess you can do that in any presentation, but it's nice and aesthetic. And then any like first aid gear I recommend or holsters I recommend, they can go and click links later. They don't have to like look everything up, take notes. They can just kind of absorb information in the class, knowing that afterwards they're going to get this like basically cheat sheet that I've made. I have one for like general concealed carry, but I have one specific for these classes. She was like, had you not had that available, I probably would have been a little overwhelmed. She was like, I am a note taker and it makes me feel nervous to pass that off to someone and like rely on their notes. But I saw it as you were talking and I felt confident I would be able to reflect on it. I did get to a point though where I was like, as an instructor, I felt so stressed because I was like, there's so much more I want to tell her. There's so much more I want to go over with her. There's context specific training I want to do with her. And I don't know if she's ever going to come back for a second one. This particular one is coming back with her husband for a date night class we're going to do soon. But for a novice instructor like me, who, if you're listening and you don't know this, the NRA certification course, the one I did, it was an absolute joke. If someone tries to tell you that they are a good instructor based on that, I would question that heavily. I would look into them a bit more, including myself. Like, anything you can do to look into that instructor, do it. Look into it more, because that, like, a woman learned how to shoot the day she got her NRA instructor certification at my class. And guess who taught her how to shoot? I did, because she was one of the only other females, and the guy teaching the class wanted me to help her. So all of that to say, I hope that gives you a good example. Borderline traumatizing, but all of that
I'm not surprised, unfortunately.
Right? Yes. And I'm looking into Range Master. That's definitely one I would like to do. I've had to really balance. I do a lot of different things, but that's bumping up on my, the more I teach, the more I realize I need that. I need something like that for instructor qualification stuff. Not even qualification, but just instructor. So I'm sorry, I'm rambling. All this to say, what advice would you give a novice instructor who is learning how to stack information like me?
Yeah. So my advice is going to touch on that, but also all the other things that you just kind of started, you know, touching on as well, like pursuing other like instruction or instructor development type courses, which certainly Rangemaster is one of the top tier ones in that regard. But anytime you have the opportunity to train with and or even study under another instructor that is well respected and does a great job, I mean, like that should absolutely be done. I actually ended up, so during that time, I kind of stepped back from teaching. I took a bunch of classes. And some would probably think that I did that because this is a thing. I've seen this happen from other instructors where you know, it was all about going to those classes and sort of like getting their curriculum and like, you know, using it to piece together mine. Actually, what I was most interested in taking a lot of those other instructors' classes was watching how they taught and how they ran their classes and what I liked and what I didn't like. And that was actually what I was most interested in. I took classes I didn't need to take per se. And in one case, kind of repeated a class I had already taken, but it was because my perspective had shifted since I had last taken it. So it was like, let me go and take that again because I'm viewing it now from this other angle. And so that was hugely beneficial to me in my own development as an instructor, was just observing and learning from not so much the material, but how it was being taught and how it was delivered. And I learned so many lessons that way. The other thing is there's tons of other great, like Range Masters is great. I would definitely encourage you to look into, there's a number of instructors that do instructor development courses. Like Tim Herron's got a great one. Actually, is it the same class? I know he's got one. So I'm thinking of, he's got a diagnostics course that's great for instructors. Is that the same as his instructor development course? I can't remember exactly, but I know he's got a great program. I haven't been able to do it yet, but Tim and I share ideas and talk all the time. And I definitely hope to be able to fit time into, to go actually go and do his course. I've taken his regular course. He's known for teaching just, you know, as a student, but not as instructor level one. Apache Solutions, Tim Kelly out in North Carolina and his group have put together, from what I'm hearing from people I trust, a really great instructor development type course. You know, it's also worthwhile. I mean, so I'm one of Scott Jedlinski's Modern Samurai Project endorsed instructors, went through his instructor red dot course. And he must have either liked me enough or was impressed enough to ask me to be an endorsed instructor, which I'm honored by. But, you know, again, just taking some of those different courses. I did Jeff Gonzalez's Concealed Carry Instructor Development course. That was fantastic. Learned a lot going through that as well. So, yeah, you definitely, I would say, you want to take those courses that you can that help you develop in the way you're passionate about pursuing. You also want to just study in general, like these good instructors and how they do things. And the third thing is to get a mentor or mentors and to have those trusted advisors that you can, you know, bounce ideas off of, that you can have intellectual, you know, discussions with about teaching, instruction, all that. I count several, you know, mentors of mine. Tim Herron's one of those. Rob Latham's one of those. Dave Spaulding is one of those, although I haven't talked to him as much in recent history, but there was a time where, and I straight up approached, I was like, Dave, I respect you. I like how you do, you know, things. Will you be my mentor? He's like, yeah. You know, like it was literally that simple. But you have to be, you know, brave enough to actually do that sometimes. And that was probably not super concise in my response, but
no, that was great.
I liked where you were going with talking about Range Master and then looking for other instructor development type courses and then just finding mentors and also taking classes from instructors that you trust and respect and try to view those from that instructor eye. And you might not always learn as much as what you would if you were just purely student in those types of classes, but it's all about what you're there for. And I love just watching masterful instructors work.
Absolutely. No, thank you so much for sharing that. That was very concise, full picture. Yeah, I feel guilty in these times because I know there's a lot I can share. I manage several jobs simultaneously. And at the end of the day, when it comes to having time to learn or record a video of me talking, I'd much rather learn. It makes me feel better. I don't feel as much anxiety because I'm doing something about that anxiety. Whereas like when I'm sharing, it's man, it's a lot more anxiety provoking, but I'm learning that balance, and I'm learning how to talk about the things I feel confident on, how to articulate that as well. I know I keep mentioning her, but Tessa has been such a good influence on like how to balance, like toe that line and just be like, very clear about like, this is what I know, this is what I don't know, this is my experience versus this is what is correct, and like jumping to an extreme. So I've definitely
been
learning how to do that. Absolutely. So
I respect the heck out of her.
And you're doing that. Absolutely. Yeah. And she's just funny and nice. So, you know, can't really go wrong there, but definitely a big supporter of my journey. Always been very frank with me about like things I should look into, or if I've done something that maybe isn't like the safest, or, you know, I could be doing better with, in the nicest way, but also very clear. And like, to me, that's like, I just like, yeah, it's just golden. But anyway, yeah, I'm glad we talked about this. This is a good topic. I wrote all of this down, so I'm on it. I've got some pretty good mentors, you being one of them. So definitely on the right path, yeah. I feel like. Yeah.
Good, good. We've probably come up, I mean, it's been about 90 minutes. So
okay.
I definitely have more that I could ask you about, and I intended to talk some more with you about competition shooting, but we didn't get there. So next time.
Yes, next time. And yes, and by then maybe I'll feel a little bit more prepared. I took a little break from finishing my master's, moving, renovating a house, and getting married all within 2 months. I took a 2 month break. So to focus on those things. And when I decided to, it was a lot, and a lot of my stuff was in boxes. So then again, I have no excuse. I could have practiced. I just felt like I had very little willpower to, you know, give up. And a lot of that went into doing things like table placements and stuff that I did not want to do. So anyway, all that to say, it's about the balance. And I'm sure by next time I'll be a little bit more well-rounded to be able to even speak on that topic. But yeah, so far I've just shot about 8 matches. Believe it's 8. I think I counted the other day in practice score. I think, you know, is it 8?
I was going to say, I thought it's maybe 1 or 2 more than that, but it.
Oh, okay. No, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Well, right now I'm just using it to be better with a pistol.
Yeah.
Just to improve my gun skills, get more comfortable moving and shooting. And it was the best decision I ever made, and I met my best friend Lisa through it. So
yeah, there you go.
So, you know, paid off. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, as we start to wrap it up here, what would be some parting words you'd like to share with the audience?
Absolutely, man. I ask all of my guest speakers this, but I did not come up with it. question everything. Like, maybe that's not very helpful, but question where you're at, and give yourself a realistic view of what you need to improve, and don't be afraid to look for the next steps, even if that's just Googling a gym near you, or if that's hiring a personal trainer, or giving yourself a goal, like a fitness goal, to walk 30 minutes a day. Find out what that next step is. We are far, far more likely to be affected by some cardiovascular illness, you know, than we are some crazy dude running at us with a machete. So check those boxes, and also have fun with it. I feel like a lot of people take this industry too seriously sometimes. A lot of these topics are so serious and deserve that attention and concentration. But like, man, some of it's just fun. Some of it's just like, this past Saturday, this dude asked me within like 2 minutes of talking to me what class I was in USPSA. And I was like, I don't know, man. And I was just like, there's so much more to me. Like, why are you asking me that? I was just like, I wanted to be like, buy me a drink first. But, you know, that may come off the wrong way. But I just kind of looked at him and I was like, I don't know. I'm just here to become a better shooter. And I'll probably continue to say that to people, even if I become a grandmaster one day, which is not going to happen. But if it does, I will probably still be like, I'm just here to learn, man. And I think approaching this path through that lens can make everything just a little bit more simple. Just like exercise is just overcomplicated. We have influencers talking about the 20 supplements you need and the 5-day split when you may be at a level where you just need to be walking outside for 30 minutes a day. So just kind of meeting yourself where you're at, being real with yourself, and giving yourself the grace to learn. Period. That's it.
I dig it.
Yeah, honestly, thank you. Really, it's been fun.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And honestly, I liked where you started when you just said question everything. Because honestly, more people probably should do that with respect to who they respect for information and education, their sources, and also with ourselves. Question everything.
Yes. My anxiety's like, got it. No worries. Already there.
Yeah, that's just kind of, I mean, I shared a little bit about my journey of like rewriting my curriculum. And that's kind of where that started was I started questioning myself. I was like, oh,
yeah.
So anyway, I liked that. And I liked everything else you said too. Where can folks find you? One more time.
Absolutely. At Fit for Fia, FIT, the number 4, FIA is all of my social, handles. No. Is the handle for all of my social platforms? Yep.
There you go.
My full name is Sophia Katz, KATZSOFIA. And She Shield Podcast is my pride and joy. That's at She Shield Pod, SHESHIELDPOD, on all platforms as well. We just started releasing full video content on YouTube. So you can see every time I reach for my big Stanley water bottle, even though I used to take that out. So yeah. That's it. Thank you, Riley. This was so lovely. I usually avoid coming on podcasts that aren't my own because it's that release of control and like that fear. But I had so much fun. Thank you.
Likewise. I appreciate it. Folks, do be sure to go listen to our podcast. I've listened to a number of her episodes and you've had some fantastic guests. In fact, some of your guests, I'm like, I should get that person on.
Yes.
So sure. Great episodes. You should check it out. And folks, again, today's episode was sponsored by the 2024 Guardian Conference, guardianconference.com. And we mentioned Livefyre, the social media app, which you should definitely check out, download, put it on your phone. Consider using that instead of these anti-gun platforms and social media apps. And links are in the show notes, and I'll try to make sure I include some other links of things that Sophia brought up as well in our discussion here today. And so until next time, a reminder to train right, train often, and train safe so you can fight hard, fight fast, and fight true. Take care. A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. Concealed Carry Inc., its brands and properties, and the Concealed Carry Podcast is not a legal service, nor are we attorneys at law. We make our best faith effort to share concealed carry-related insights and information about firearm-related incidents and the laws pertaining based on our own understanding and experience. But things can be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in this podcast. Please exercise care with all things pertaining to firearm use, concealed carry, and always practice following basic firearm safety rules. More information about safety can be found at concealedcarry.com/safety.